Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
At this time of year, but especially this year, we remember what happened 20 years ago. We remember the crisp, clear September day when America's, innocence maybe was taken forever. Now Afghanistan is ending, but the memories will always be there. We will never forget. Here's Roadkill.
Roadkill with Geraldo Rivera.
In terms of the times, they are a changing. This is 20 years after 9/11. I mean, in a certain way, I think people get exhausted by all of the honoring. Some honor, some wallow, some are inspired by, others are horrified by. It's one of those anniversaries that's just so awesomely, breathtakingly important to anyone of a certain age. I always tell the story how 20 years ago, Erica and I were living on the beach in Malibu and living a wonderful life. We had a show on CNBC, Rivera Live. We did the Simpson case, the Clinton impeachment, Monica Lewinsky, Gary Condit. We did all the news du jour, but when the attacks of 9/11 happened, everything else seemed so silly. Everything else seemed so pointless. Before all was said and done, in the period of a few weeks and months, you know the story, it's a familiar story now. Eric and I went from being employees of NBC with the number one rated show to Erica being, holding down the home fort when I went off to Afghanistan in an attempt to get the people that got us so horribly 20 years ago tomorrow. We expect Zach Reed to be calling us, one of the leading candidates for mayor of Cleveland. I think we do have him. All right, great. Big primary coming up on the 14th, right? Isn't it Tuesday? Okay, so we'll get into the solemn stuff. And I really want to reprise the gut-wrenching interview I did with Bernie Kerik, the then 20 years ago, commissioner of the police department of New York City, as he recounts his movements that day. I think it really gives a true measure of the poignancy of what happened. But let's start politics. Let's start Zach Reed, relatively young man 20 years ago. How old were you 20 years ago, Zach?
I was 40 years old.
40? Oh, well, he's still relatively young. And do you remember, welcome to the show, do you remember, what do you remember when you remember that day?
I remember it like that generation that remember Pearl Harbor and John F. Kennedy being shot. I remember it because literally I just became a city council person. And I was up for re-election, I got appointed in, and I was running for my first election. And I remember vividly sitting in my mother's kitchen table, and we were watching NBC. You were talking about NBC, number one rated show in the morning, watching it. And suddenly, I saw a plane going to the building. I was like, "That's crazy!" And then. Saw the second one, and then you know, all horror hit right then and there, that this wasn't just a plane that accidentally went off route and went into the building. This was becoming a full-fledged terrorist attack. So take that, just like that generation to remember Pearl Harbor and that generation to remember when John F. Kennedy got killed, my generation remembers 9/11. And I will never forget that day.
And it changed the world for almost everybody. You didn't have to be in New York to have your world totally disrupted. What did you think was going to happen, Zachary? What did you think was the day was going to end? Did you think we were going to war?
Oh, I knew we had to go to war. I mean, America is not going to let someone do that to 3,000 of our citizens here and come to our soil. It's almost like what FDR said, this day will live in infamy. And right after that, we declared war and we went out to the Japanese and the Germans and helped the Allied forces bring down a tyrant, a dictator, a madman in Hitler. And we were able to win that war. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, by all measures, we weren't able to win the Afghanistan war, but we did get bin Laden. And, you know, hey, our lives are much better because he's gone. And, you know, but I think it's one of those things where we just will never forget that particular day. I know I won't, because like I said, I was sitting at my mother's kitchen table and when, you know, watching that TV set and seeing both those planes go in. And ironically, I was supposed to go to City Hall that day. We're supposed to have a meeting that day. And I remember telling my mom, I'm not going to City Hall. And I remember I met a friend and he and I have caught each other and got a hold of each other every year from 20 years ago, for the last 20 years. And I'm quite sure we'll get to call each other tomorrow, at least text her each other, because we stayed with each other for that entire day because of that situation.
You mean experiencing this historic event as friends together?
Yes. After I didn't go downtown because I was supposed to meet him. I was supposed to go to City Hall to do some work, and then I was going to meet him for lunch. And we both said we're not going downtown because, you know, we didn't know what was happening. You know, as you know, that one plane that where we had those brave heroes that took down that plane in Pennsylvania, you know, that air flight, they said, was coming towards Cleveland. So no one knew what was going on, but we knew, if anything, they're going to be trying to go towards big buildings, and, you know, most of our big buildings are downtown. So we both said, let's not meet downtown. And we met at a little cafe out in Shaker Heights, your hometown. And basically we sat at that cafe and had lunch. We stayed there and had lunch. We had dinner. We had coffee. And we just talked and said that we would remember this entire day for the rest of our lives.
Why do you want to be mayor, Zach?
Oh, because I love this city. And I love the people in this city. And the people in this city and this city as a whole has been good to me. And it's been good to my family. And the mayor's job, this opportunity gives me the chance to give back to the city and the people in this city to give back to them what they've given to me and my family over the years that we've grown up here in this fantastic city. Secondly, I know because of my long experience working for two governors, working for a mayor in San Francisco, 17 years as a Cleveland City Council person, and just finishing 3 years working for Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose. I know the importance of leadership. And what we've lacked over the last 16 years is a lack of full-fledged leadership. I've got those qualities. I've got those experience. I got that experience. And when you've matched my experience and my leadership together, I can guarantee you, Arado, when I'm mayor of the city of Cleveland, because I'm confident we're going to win this race, you're going to see a difference, a dramatic difference on both sides of the city. We see one side of the city downtown and one side of the city, the west side, prospering and moving forward. On our side of the city, because whether you live in Shaker like you do, and I'm your next-door neighbor in Mount Pleasant, the East Side is not seeing that prosperity. And I'm saying that we can do both. We can do the what we need to continue the growth and prosperity that's going on the West Side of the city of Cleveland. And I got a plan to continue that growth and that prosperity. But I want to bring that growth, prosperity, and renaissance to the East Side to show that all 34 neighborhoods can grow and prosper if you have the right leadership, if you have the right plan in place at City Hall. And that plan has to start with public safety.
I want to get around to that because I absolutely agree with you. But how did you respond when you heard, as I'm sure you did, that Dennis Kucinich said that if people don't want to vote for him, then he encourages them to vote for you? Kind of an embrace by a key rival.
Well, ironically, as you know, I was a councilman for 17 years, and every year we used to go to Washington. And I remember the years that he was a congressperson and I was a councilperson. Whenever I would call up his office, because I would meet with all the tried to meet with the entire congressional delegation from state of Ohio, and especially Cuyahoga County, he would always open his door. And not only have me sit down and meet with an aide, he wanted to meet with me firsthand. So we grew and formed a relationship. We have grown and formed a relationship throughout this campaign. And he has looked at and he's evaluated what most Clevelanders have looked at and evaluated, that I've grown over the years. I'm a much better person than I was years ago because of some problems that I had over the years. And he's seen that my leadership skill is there and that I have the qualities to be a mayor. He's seen it. He knows firsthand.
Without getting into the what it is that you you let yourself down over the years, would you reciprocate with Dennis and say that if you don't vote for you, Zach Reed, then you encourage people to vote for Dennis? Do you make the same deal he made to you?
I would say this, that he has the qualities to go to 601 Lakeside to be mayor of the city of Cleveland. I would say that.
You alluded.
There are others in this race that clearly do not have the qualifications. They do not have the experience, and they do not have the leadership skills to go and manage a $1.8 billion budget. They just don't.
Are you referring to Justin Bibb?
I'm referring to a lot of people in this race. Not I'm not saying one person. I'm telling you that I can just tell you from my standpoint. I was a councilman for 17 years. I watched and looked at and approved or disapproved, but I evaluated the city budget for 17 years. I know every line item of that city budget. So when I go to City Hall, I'm not going down there trying to figure out where the money is and how we get the money. I know firsthand because I had to do that for 17 years. So there's some who will tell you that I've done this and I've advised some people and I've done and I know this and I've my experience and my life has done this and that and in between. I'm telling you firsthand that's great and fantastic and I'm glad, but I'm telling you as a person who has the experience to go to City Hall and day one, know that budget, know every neighborhood, all 34 neighborhoods in the city of Cleveland, and get the job done.
Well, let me ask you this. Zach Reed, our guest, one of the leading candidates for mayor of Cleveland in next week's primary, you alluded to public safety. You alluded to people feeling unsafe on the streets of Cleveland. What would Zach Reed do to make Cleveland immediately safer?
Well, first of all, I don't allude to it. I go right at it. It's the number one, number two, number three problem in the city of Cleveland. And we've got to do something about it. What would I do about it? First of all, I would say, because I know we have a short period, I would tell people to go to my website, zachreed.com, and look at the only candidate that has laid out a 10-point plan that addresses public safety. And when you look at that plan, I will guarantee you, Araldo, that when I'm elected mayor of the city of Cleveland and I implement that plan, you will see a dramatic reduction of crime in the city of Cleveland and violence. What does it take? First of all, we got to hire more police officers. Anybody that tells you that they don't want to hire more police officers is living in a fool's paradise. Secondly, we got to get the police the equipment. We got to give them the equipment and the technology that they need to go out and do a very tough job. Thirdly, we got to hold them accountable. When they don't police constitutionally, they must be held accountable. And then thirdly, and you and I have talked about this, we need to bring a national organization to Cleveland called Cure Violence that looks at this violence from a public health lens. If we did those four things, just those four things, you would see a dramatic reduction of violence. So I encourage people, go to my website. I'm the only candidate. You would think out of the seven candidates, everybody would at least put what their plan is to make the city of Cleveland safer in black and white. I'm the only candidate that's done that. So I'm saying to you that you go to ZachReed.com, look at that 10-point plan. You will see a plan in place that when I'm elected mayor will make every neighborhood, every community, every ward in this city of Cleveland safer than it is today.
And so, Zach Reed, how do you feel people are looking at you right now with just days to go before the big primary? Do you think you've got a shot at this?
Oh, we know we got a shot at it. As I go door to door, because I'm running a full-fledged grassroots campaign, you know, we're not looking at the television and the radio and all of that type, newspaper ads and things like that. We're going directly to the people. And as I knock on doors across this city, you know, I was in the central area in Ward 5 yesterday. I had my team in Ward 4 yesterday in the Shaker, in your area, Shaker Square area. I had another team that was working over in the Collinwood area. We are crisscrossing this city, okay? We'll be over in the West Park area this weekend. We are crisscrossing this city. And as I crisscross this city and I talk to the residents themselves, they just talk about what you talk about, Rado, that you've been talking about this public safety for an awful long time. Let's put you in there and see whether or not what you've been talking about can actually work. So a number of them have said to me, I'm voting for you because you're the only one that looks like you really have a plan to deal with public safety. You're the only one that has never talked about defunding the police. I know there are others, including our friend Dennis Kucinich, but there's some on this campaign trail that have talked about defunding the police, reducing the police. I mean, that's just crazy.
Just crazy.
I don't even know where that comes from.
Listen, Zach, have a great weekend. Best wishes to you. You're a good man, and I, you know, Cleveland could do a lot worse than Zach Reed as mayor. You could really be a great one.
Thank you, Robert. You have a good one.
I give you all the best. All right, man. Let's get together.
All right, brother. Bye-bye.
Okay, Zach. See ya. You know, going back now to, you know, the weight of this last 20 years and how it's affected all of our lives, I think it's affected the country in an extremely negative way over time. It's made us more divided. It's made us more suspicious. It's made us more paranoid. And of course, takes a toll on us. But for now, I want to, when we come back after Steve Bailey gives us the news, I'd like to really listen to Bernie Kerik as he describes what happened, the police commissioner of New York City, on the day where he played such a crucial role in keeping things together at Ground Zero. In a few minutes, Erica will come on. We can reminisce. We can reminisce, all of us together, about that awful day 20 years ago. But right now, as promised, Bernie Kerik was right in the middle of it. The police commissioner, confidant to Mayor Rudy Giuliani at the time, these men found themselves right in the eye of this awful hurricane that affected so many of our lives in such a very negative way. So without further ado, here's Commissioner Bernie Kerik's recollections of what happened that day to him.
Commissioner Kerik, thank you. We love you. Where were you when you heard that the first plane hit?
When I heard the first plane hit, I was actually in my office. I was in the bathroom. Somebody started banging on the door, and it turned out to be my chief of staff, who said that a plane just hit Tower 1. I thought it was a small plane. I thought it was one of those Cessnas or maybe a helicopter that flew up and down the Hudson River many times by your house in Edgewater. And, you know, I looked up at a television that was above the treadmill in the back of my office, and I could see the damage to the building. And I realized at that point that it was no small aircraft. I got on the phone. I spoke to the mayor. And I was down there. I got to the corner of Vesey Street and West Broadway within 7 or 8 minutes. And I was trying to get into 7 World Trade, where our command center was. And the police stopped us. And a sergeant ran up to my car, and he told us to back up. And he yelled, "You got to back up. They're jumping." And I had no idea. I didn't know what he meant. And I got out of the vehicle. And I could see debris coming down off of the side of Tower 1. And as that debris got closer to the ground, I realized that it was human bodies. And they were jumping, some 1, 2, 3 at a time. And
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
They were, you know, disintegrating, basically. They landed on Vesey Street. They landed in the courtyard between the two buildings. And they were hitting the overhead awnings, which sounded like small explosions. And it was probably in my career, Geraldo, you know, as a cop, there's not many times that you go to the scene and you can't take charge. You can't do something to help. This was the first time in my entire career where I felt completely helpless. There was nothing you could do. You couldn't yell up at these people and say, stop, wait, don't jump. You couldn't catch them. There was nothing you could do. You just had to back up and watch. And it was probably one of the worst things about that day.
And then the second tower.
When the second tower slammed through the north side of the building, I was standing in front of the building. I was waiting for the mayor, and I had called for a temporary command post, a bus, to be put on the corner of Barclay and West Broadway. And about 3 minutes before Rudy Giuliani got there, that second plane slammed through the north side of the building on top of us. And at first, I didn't know it was a plane. I didn't see the second plane. It came from the southern end of Manhattan, and I could hear the aviation pilots or the NYPD's helicopter pilots yelling that a second aircraft had just hit Tower 2. And at that point, I knew we were under attack.
What'd you do?
The mayor arrived about to, initially, we had to run up West Broadway and get behind Tower 7 because this stuff was coming down on us. Hector Santiago, one of my detectives, was actually hit in the back of the leg as we were running. He got hit in the back of the leg with a shaft, a piece of the wheel well from the plane, and nearly took him down. We got behind 7 until the debris stopped coming down, and then the mayor rolled up about 3 or 4 minutes later. We met for a couple minutes. We walked down to West Street, and at West Street, they had a temporary command post set up where we met with the first deputy commissioner, the chief of department, the chief of operations for the fire department, and Father Judge, the fire department's chaplain. We talked to them for about 15 minutes, and Father Judge blessed us as we walked away. And I was taking the mayor back to Barclay Street to an office. We had set up a temporary command post inside an office there where he was going to call the president. And just as we walked into that building, he sat down, got on the phone, was on the phone actually with the White House, and somebody came on and they said, listen, we have to go. We think the Pentagon just got hit and they're evacuating the White House. And he hung up the phone, and as he did, the building we were in at 75 Barclay Street, which was at the corner of West Broadway and Barclay, that building started to shake like a freight train was coming through the side of it. And that was Tower 2 imploding around us.
And so the collapse happens, debris, smoke thrown everywhere. What did you, what did Mayor Giuliani do?
Well, you know, we were inside that building. As the buildings imploded, we were less than 100 yards in front of it. So that debris spread out all the way up to where we were. And to give you an idea of what it was like, Joe Dunn, my first deputy commissioner, was in that Chrysler minivan. He had a torn Achilles tendon. And that minivan, that night, we realized, was only about 18 inches tall. So that gives you an idea of the spread of the debris. The mayor and I were actually trapped inside that building. You know, when you think of all the debris and the dust and the gas and the soot and all this other stuff, it blew out all the windows of the front of the building. And then we were basically trapped in there. I remember thinking at the time all the stuff that I'd been through, gun battles, you know, being stabbed, shot at, as a cop. I'm going to wind up dying in this office because we're going to suffocate. We just couldn't breathe. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, these two maintenance guys, you know, we heard this rattling of a door. This door opens up, and, you know, they were cast iron doors. This door opens up, and there's these two maintenance guys with a bunch of keys. They were about as shocked to see the mayor and I as we would see them, but I realized at that point they had keys to get us through the basement of that building into Church Street, onto Church Street, which was a block and a half away. And we came out on Church Street, and when we did, all of the debris, the soot and everything had settled down. And I swear, as we walked out of Church Street, I thought that we had been involved in a nuclear blast. There was about maybe a half an inch of dust and soot on the ground, and there was no sound. That's the one thing I remember more than anything. When we walked out those doors, it was like somebody put headphones on you and eliminated all sound. There were no car horns, no sirens, no birds, no nothing. And all we could see was this white dust, a half an inch, maybe three quarters of an inch on the ground. And I kept thinking, you know, what just happened? We had no idea that the building had come down.
This is the former New York City Police Commissioner, former Corrections Commissioner of New York, my dear friend, one of my best friends, Bernard Carrick. When did you realize how grievous were our injuries and what exactly had happened?
Well, I mean, it started rather quickly. We learned within minutes after we got out onto Church Street that Tower 2 had imploded. And every one of those guys that I mentioned earlier, Father Judge, the first deputy commissioner, Gansey, from the fire department, the chief of operations, every single one of those guys that we had just left, they all died that morning. And we were with them 15 minutes earlier. We realized that the numbers were going to be substantial. Didn't know how many at the time. In total, I lost 23 from the NYPD. We lost 343 from the fire department and 37 from Port Authority Police, plus the people in the building. But there's something, Geraldo, that people have to remember today. I lost 23 cops on that day. We've lost 241 to date since in the NYPD as a result of the illnesses cancer and breathing issues as a result of their work there. So that's one thing that can never be forgotten. And I just like to touch on one other thing, because I think this gets lost sometime in the mix. On that day, on September 11, 2001, the first responders of New York City effected what I consider the greatest rescue mission in the history of our country. They took 25 to 30,000 people out of those buildings in the surrounding area, but then they evacuated more than a million people out of southern Manhattan into the four boroughs and into New Jersey with the help of the New Jersey State Police almost effortlessly. You know, we had constantly practiced for crisis, mock drills, tabletop exercises, and all this other stuff with Rudy Giuliani from 1996 on. But it all came into play on that day, where they exercised some of the greatest rescue mission in the history of our country. And I think sometimes that's forgotten.
Do you remember the first time we saw each other after that day?
I do. I do. I'm getting teary-eyed thinking about it. It was just a bad time.
I want to ask you how your nightmares are from that night.
You know what? I often tell people I don't really have nightmares. I don't. But you know what? I live it daily. I don't think, in all honesty, I don't think there's a day that goes by. In 18 years, there isn't a day that goes by that I don't think of it in some way, that I don't talk to someone, that somebody doesn't walk up to me and thank me, or that, you know, somebody doesn't talk to me about somebody that works for me. That's gone on for 18 years, and I think it will happen until the day I die. I'm left with memories, bad and good. I saw the worst and the best in humanity. I wear a bracelet on my wrist that memorializes the 23 people that worked for me.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And this is something I live with. And it's not only me. It's everybody that was with me, the people that were with me. You know, we witnessed leadership on that day in Rudy Giuliani that I strongly believe has been unparalleled in this country. Those are the memories I live with. Those are the things I think about.
You know, when you talk to your cops, I'm going to wrap it up. Bernard Carrick, so gracious with his time on this morning of all mornings. Every year they're going to find you wherever you are, and they're going to ask you these same questions. Has America healed? Have we healed? Do you think that, you know, there's lots of people now that are around. Some are GIs that weren't even born 18 years ago.
Yeah, I know. You know, it kind of makes me crazy. You know, are we healed? I don't know, Geraldo. I'd say no. And I'd say no because, one, people have short memories. People, you know, they forget what happened. And a lot weren't born at the time. But I have to tell you, in the aftermath of 9/11, as we traveled around the city, Rudy and I, and then with President Bush on the 14th, 3 days after, I remember the unity and the resilience in the city and in the country coming together in ways that I've never seen before and haven't seen since. But today, we are so polarized. We are so, in many ways, to me, there are people. people in this country that are completely anti-American. We have members in Congress. We have members in Congress today that support terror groups that actually attacked us. I don't get it. It kills me when I think about that stuff. Are we healed? I don't know. I really can't say.
You're the best, man. I love you, your family. You're such a great American. And I can't wait to see you and hang out, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day. And you thanks too. For your support.
All the way.
No idea the building had come down 20 years ago, listening to Commissioner Kerik right in the heart of darkness, recounting with his professional eye the trauma that staggered our nation and will affect us for generations to come, I believe.
Tuesday, 9:47 a.m.
Hi, baby. Baby, you have to listen to me carefully. I'm on a plane that's been hijacked. I'm on the plane. I'm calling from the plane. I want to tell you I love you. Please tell my children that I love them very much. And I'm so sorry, babe. I hope to be able to see your face again, baby. I love you. Bye.
Did you hear the explosion from your position?
Yes, we did. As a matter of fact, we heard it and because I was just like standing there pretty much looking out the window. I didn't see what caused it or if there was an impact.
So you have no idea right now?
Oh, there's another one. Another plane just hit. Oh, my God. Another plane has just hit. It hit another building. Flew right into the middle of it. Explosion. My God, it's right in the middle of the building.
This one into the East Tower.
Yes. Yes, right in the middle of the building. And right now, that was definitely looked like it was on purpose.
Definitely looks like it was on purpose. Of course it was. It was the most evil, despicable, mass murderous act. You know, it's funny, honey, when I was listening to the eyewitness accounts, the first voice I heard sounded so much like your voice. We were in California, and it affected our lives in a way that we could never imagine. It affected the whole nation in a way that we never imagined. I wonder now that the war in Afghanistan is over, how we'll remember, or will it be different when we remember 9/11, Erica?
I was confused hearing that voice. It did sound so much like mine and exactly what I would have said to you and in that moment. And I was just reading an opinion piece by Condoleezza Rice in the Wall Street Journal saying that those of us who were alive on 9/11 will never forget it, and we must tell the story to those who are not old enough to feel the horror and sadness of that day, because it'll always be a part of us as Americans, and we want the younger generations to know about it so that it's not repeated. And I think a lot about the heroes on the United Airlines flight, like Todd Beamer, who called the flight controller to say the Lord's Prayer with him before rushing the cockpit. What a hero. It's just, I get so choked up. I am so grateful that we were stuck in L.A. that day, because I have no doubt that you would have gone straight to those towers and you would not have come out of them.
You know, listening to Bernie, our dear friend Bernie Kerik, the former police commissioner of New York, recounting what happened, he's so matter-of-fact in his own way. We know how deeply affected he and the whole nation has been. You know, when you think about it, what to you is the most lasting impact in domestic America? I mean, among the people we know, what's the most lasting impact of 9/11? Is it that we are divided now? Is it that we're paranoid now? Is it that we keep our promise? If you come after us, we're going to come after you. Get you eventually. I mean, what do you take away, Erica?
Well, I mean, I would like to believe that we are more secure now than we were on 9/11. I mean, we have better technology in the airports. We can, I think we track for terrorism much better now. I don't think as we are as innocent and naive as we used to be.
Can you believe it's been 20 years?
I cannot believe it. I really can't.
I mean, Seoul wasn't even
born. I remember
born.
Seeing the smoke in the sky over Manhattan for months after 9/11.
I remember that pile, that horrible, horrible pile, and then going off to war, and I just think about going off to war and the fury that led us to go to war, and you know, the resolve. And now I wonder, now the war kind of peters out 20 years later, you know, what a horrible experience for a whole generation. And I think that will scar the country, if not the whole world, for many, many decades to come.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder, what was it all for? I understand that we all felt united at the time to seek revenge and to find Osama bin Laden, but it is hopefully a huge lesson to really think the next time before we enter a war.
Well, I don't think we had much choice in after 9/11. We had to get the people that got us.
And I miss George Bush. I miss his humanity. I do. I mean, I know he's the one, he and Dick Cheney got us into this mess, but I think that, but I loved it when he went to Ground Zero and he spoke to all of America, and I thought he spoke from his heart, and I'll never forget it.
He wasn't a perfect man, but he was perfect enough. He was...
He's a good-hearted person.
So believable, good-hearted person. Mm-hmm. Good-hearted person. Well, you know, tomorrow, everybody, you know, remember it as you see fit. Remember it as it fits you and your family. Don't ever forget it. I'm sure you won't. You know, we'll get back to all the other day-to-day issues that affect all of our lives going forward, the elections and so forth. But we'll never forget it. We're forever affected by it. Thanks very much for listening. Honey, I'm on the way home. I can't wait to see you.
Can't wait to see you too.
Okay, I'll be back.
Safe travels.
Okay, Erica and I will be back in Cleveland on Monday. Have a great weekend. Remember, but have a great weekend also. Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye. Remember the heroes. Remember the victims. Remember when we were all on the same team. Let's long for that again, to be on the same team again. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Geraldo Rivera reporting Roadkill.
Roadkill with Geraldo Rivera.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.